and order is on everyone's mind because lawlessness is on everyone's television screen, radio, digital media, whatever you prefer to look at. It is just, and it's becoming probably the second most mentioned topic as we head to the midterms. And to help us sort out what in the world's going on, the disconnect in the minds of many on the left, including St. Louis's Cori Bush, is Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, spokeswoman for the National Police Association, and a veteran of the police profession herself. Thanks for being with me, Sergeant Smith. Really, really great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. This is such an important issue as we head into the midterms, although, of course, policing should not be political, but the defund the police movement has unfortunately made it such.
Let me have you take a listen to something. Now, this is from the summer of 21. This was an interview with Cori Bush from St. Louis, representative from St. Louis, and still maintaining the defund the police mechanism. But this is when she was asked, like, how come you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on your own security, but you're for defunding the police? This was her answer.
So if I end up spending $200,000, if I spend $10 more dollars on it, you know what? I get to be here to do the work. So suck it up, and defunding the police has to happen. We need to defund the police and put that money into social safety nets.
It leaves you almost speechless, doesn't it, Sergeant Smith?
Well, it does. And now, you know, as we come forward another year, she has spent nearly $500,000 on her own security, but she has tripled down on defunding the police. She wants the St. Louis County Jail closed. She wants St. Louis PD to go away. And yet St. Louis, her constituency, is number two in homicides in the nation. So while she gets to make sure that she's safe, her constituents are getting murdered right and left.
And we have a parallel situation. It's not just her. I mean, this is systemic in blue precincts, right? It's up in Seattle as well. Explain that one. There's a councilwoman up there who's got the same deal going on.
So the councilwoman Kashana Sawant was probably the most vocal member of the Seattle City Council in the last few years, talking about defunding the Seattle Police Department. And that's saying a lot in Seattle. And of course, now Seattle, 2 years later, is short at least 500 police officers. And unfortunately, if you get sexually assaulted in the city of Seattle, there's a real good chance that that case isn't going to get investigated. But Ms. Sawant has had feces, we're not sure if it's human or animal, flung at her home on several occasions. So she wants a Seattle Police Department patrol car seated in front of her home from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. until the perpetrator is caught. You know, damned sexual assault victims or wow, homicide investigations or answering 911 calls. She wants that car in front of her house. And, you know, it's not just... You know, these are not just two examples. You know, we just heard the other night Stacey Abrams during her debate with Brian Kemp and the Libertarian candidate talk about, I've always supported the police, Stacey Abrams says, for the last 11 years. And yet she was the head of a foundation that was working hard to defund the police. And it goes on and on.
It's just crazy. We're talking with Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, spokeswoman for the National Police Association, herself a veteran of many facets of policing, all the way from starting as a dispatcher at age 17 to training and video involvement with training videos and so forth. And I noticed you were in crisis intervention unit at one point, or had some involvement with that.
I was a supervisor.
Okay, so I always think it's a good thing, a wise thing, and strategically a smart thing to take the other side's best argument and make sure that you can defeat it, right? So the best argument that I'm thinking of for defund the police, what we hear is, look, these are social problems. These problems have their root. Criminality has its root in, you know, poverty and homelessness, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And we need people not in uniforms with guns and tasers. We need people, I'm thinking, maybe are they thinking we need more crisis intervention units? I've actually heard some police officers say those are very helpful. You were a supervisor. Is that what they mean? And is there some credence to that? What do they mean? And why won't it work?
Well, here's the thing. Crisis intervention training for police officers is so important. And, you know, you hear a lot of talk about, well, we need more social workers. Look, I have had police social workers by my side for the entire time that I was on a police farm. We always had police social workers available. We love them. We love to have them come out to the various mental health calls that we encounter. But we always made sure that our police social workers were not endangered in any way. And that's the difference. When you hear this reimagined policing, we need to send social workers to certain 911 calls. No one can predict what is going to happen to a 911 call. The two police officers that we just had murdered in Connecticut were answering a 911 call for a domestic dispute. It was a fake call. And those two police officers were murdered. A third was shot. What if Bristol, Connecticut sent social workers, unarmed, unprotected social workers, to that 911 domestic call instead of sending those police officers? We would have dead social workers and no one able to return fire. At least the third police officer on that scene was able to kill the suspect who lured those police officers in. So, yeah, if we could have every single police officer in this country trained in crisis intervention, that would be great. But nobody wants to pay for it. And when you've defunded your police department, there's no money for training.
Well, and wasn't the canary in this coal mine in terms of the blue flight out of the profession and people really not entering it? I mean, you know, here in Columbia, we've had the same problem with people just not. It's hard to get people to sign up, even though it may be increased funding in certain places. And thankfully, that's in this year's budget here. But I'm thinking of Carmen Best, Seattle's first black police chief, that back in September of 2020, she left her post after the city council defunded. They cut the budget by, what, 4 or 5 million? And they cut 100 officers. And she said, forget it. I'm not going to be accountable for policing if I don't have the resources. That was, I think that was a very telling moment in this whole movement that has just been a disaster for the safety of the very communities that are most critical of the police. It's just bizarre.
Well, it absolutely is. And remember, Carmen Best was forced to have her officers give up one of her precincts to Antifa, basically, where we had the Chop Chaz. Then we had two young people of color who were murdered within a week. And that just created this huge disaster in the city of Seattle that they are still trying to recover from 2 years later. And that's the thing with this defund the police movement is, even if, as you're seeing, some police departments, including Seattle, are being quote unquote refunded, it's going to take years to put these training programs back in place, social services programs, community policing programs, and get police officers to take the job. Just what you said. Why would any young person want to take this job after listening to 2 years of vilification of the profession? Are we supposed to turn to young people and say, oh, yeah, we know we told you cops are bad, they're racist, they're killers, they're Gestapo, they're this and that. But, hey, why don't you come be one? It defies logic.
No, you're right. And I have to tell you, every time, the most recent time, I was getting a soda at the gas and more, you know, and it was after a theater thing, and it was midnight and in a sort of a rough neighborhood and down in St. Louis, you know, and a police officer was there filling up his cup of coffee. And I said, from the bottom of my heart, I know you guys are taking a beating, but thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I could just feel. And then it happened in a washroom a week or two earlier. And you can feel that these guys and gals are they're underappreciated. They're being demonized. And it just, are there a handful of bad apples in policing in the United States? Of course there are. There's a handful of bad apples everywhere. I mean, have you checked out Congress lately? But I mean, gosh darn it, I'm so thankful that people are still doing what they're doing and putting themselves in harm's way for our safety. And it just frosts me that they keep getting demonized by the very people that should know better in leadership positions here. What are we going to do about it? What can we do? Of course, the midterms are coming up.
Well, and I do think you're going to see, that crime and policing is the number one or two issue on the ticket, which is great. Although policing and security and safety should not be political. Listen, this is why the National Police Association exists, because we're trying to help citizens figure out how they can best support their police departments. And you just said one of the most important things a citizen can do: walk up to a cop and thank them for what they're doing, because we feel just beleaguered and vilified. But I tell you, you talk about leadership. Our police leadership is going to, in every city in this nation, is going to have to stand up and talk about the false narratives and speak out when people in their community, including their political leaders, say things that are not true about their police officers. We need support from our leadership, from the media, from politicians, and from everyday citizens out there who mostly do appreciate American law enforcement.
Absolutely. And I tell you a funny side story. You'll get a kick out of this. We were talking earlier. Producer Brian, his son had his truck parked in a sort of a narrow street where you have to park close to the thing. He's always parked in front of the house for 5-6 years. Suddenly, tickets for everyone parked next to the street curb where they've always parked, and there's some crazy ordinance here, and I was talking, I said, gosh, I love the police, but why are they wasting their time giving a ticket to a guy that's been parking in the same place for 6 years, we have a great police department here in Columbia, and the assistant police chief called us and said, hey, I'm going to get to the bottom of this and we're going to find out and let you know. And I thought, now there, that is emblematic of every encounter I've ever had with any law enforcement officer. You know what I mean? I think these are the finest people in the land, and for them to be demonized and to have the morale the way it is, it just breaks my heart, I tell you. I think the pendulum's going to swing the other way, though, don't you? I feel it happening.
Well, we do. We see it around the country. My husband and I travel around the country and train police officers, and we do have an affinity for Columbia. Boy, people don't know this about Missouri. You have some of the most highly educated, dedicated police officers there, and especially in Columbia, that agency has suffered some terrible losses and kept on going. Yeah. And we so appreciate that. But yeah, we are seeing the tide turn, and one of the things that we're seeing is police officers are paying attention to what's happening politically, not just nationally, but locally and in state races and things like that. And they're starting to see that it's time to get involved.
Are you talking at the National Police Association level? And I mean, you're clearly a very prominent and effective spokeswoman, I can tell you that. If you were talking to my group, I'd be listening. And if I was a prosecutor's group at some one of their national prosecutors convention, I'd be listening to Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith. I hear a lot of frustration between police officers. You hear it in interviews. Hey, we keep arresting these recurrent people and they just keep coming out. What's going on? How's things between the officers and the prosecutors these days?
Well, that's another thing that's extremely regional, because again, what the public needs to know is that I can arrest every single bad guy in town, but if my local county prosecutor won't take that case to court and won't keep the bad guy in jail until we go to trial, then I'm not going to be able to do my job effectively. So it very much depends on where you live and where you work. You look at Chicago, Illinois, we have Kim Fox, the prosecutor of the gangbangers, who virtually lets everyone out, to either await their trial or maybe they don't go to trial at all. But on the other hand, you have a fantastic prosecutor in Jacksonville, Florida, who is just a, no holes barred, we're going to get rid of violent crime kind of prosecutor. Those cops down there love her. Mm. So it's a very much a regional situation, which again, in the United States of America, safety and security should not be regional. That people
That's job one.
Yeah, absolutely. People who don't feel safe aren't free. We want all of our citizens everywhere to feel safe.
Before I let you go, a criminal justice question that I bring up often here on the program, and again, I'm not an expert at this. You are, and I don't know the science behind it. But these young men, particularly in our inner cities, but it's really, I think it's widespread. Young men are really a problem in our society. And of course, there's a lot of sociologic, you know, reasons for that and so forth. But could it be true that we're too soft on early soft crime? You know, the kid that steals a six pack of soda from the Five and Dime and gets away with it. You know what I mean? Are we too permissive with what are called, quote, nonviolent crimes? And we sort of send a message before it gets to the George Soros sponsored prosecutor level and someone's killed someone. Would it behoove us to be a little tougher from, you know, the officer, not the officer, but the prosecutor, the judge, and break that dog from biting that kid, to use an analogy, early before they maul some kid? You know what I mean?
Doctor, you are an expert in this, because what you just described is broken windows policing. What that is if you take care of the small stuff, very often you won't have to deal with the big stuff. That's exactly what you're talking about. So if we would take care of these small issues, whether it's turnstile jumping in New York City or it's a shoplifting in a rural city in Missouri, if we take care of getting those kids to understand what they're doing is wrong and punish them in a way that helps them and that's what the juvenile justice system is all about, mm-hmm. then yes. But what we have is a society of young men who, a lot of them, they have no fathers, they have no religion, and they really have no future, no optimism, nothing to look forward to. And I just have to say that just because you're poor doesn't mean you're going to be a criminal. I hear that a lot. Oh, it's because, you know, of poverty. I know a whole lot of poor people, and I was one of them, who never thought about committing a crime. So there's a whole lot more to the issue than just poverty and opportunity.
Yeah, and I don't want to be presumptuous, but I guess you would not be opposed to more of the sort of the root cause analysis and addressing that in a better way with mental health and more accountability and expectations of families and dads staying with the moms that have their babies. You know, I mean, I think it can be a yes and, can it, where we tighten up on our policing and our enforcement at earlier levels and at the same time support people and have some accountability from the family side, too, so that, you know, those sociological things are addressed. Right. This isn't a one sided equation.
No, you can't just take everyone and throw them in jail. It is not a one-size-fits-all situation. And we do have, especially since the pandemic, a higher level of young people with mental health issues. You know, we've got increased homelessness. You know, we have all these issues. And, you know, police officers don't deal with things in a one-size-fits-all situation. I mean, every cop in the country will tell you they've dealt with a young person or perhaps an older person where they didn't take them to jail. They went out and they helped them and they got them services and things like that. But we're in a society that lacks respect for life and also respect for authority. That's that dangerous combination that we've got to get rid of in the United States.
Well, this has been a really grand discussion. I really appreciate all of your input and all of your passion for policing and for keeping us safe and giving us some tips, too, in terms of how to help encourage our police officers. And again, with the National Police Association, I really would you tell everyone on behalf of me and Brian and everyone in this audience how much we genuinely are just have tremendous gratitude for everything they do and all the risk they take and the courage it takes to do what they do.
Well, thank you so much. On behalf of American law enforcement, we sure appreciate that because we want to go out there every day, do our jobs, and keep our communities safe.
Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith with the National Police Association. God bless you. Thank you very much.